Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I think that's a couple of minutes early or 2 minutes early, but everyone seems to be here. I hope so anyway, so I'd like to start the afternoon. It's really nice to see so many of you here this afternoon on the first 5 o'clock meeting of the season, my first season, so really nice. Before we start proceedings and introduce Richard, I'd like to ask our Honorary Secretary to read any notices or tell us what the numbers are.
Just the numbers. Good afternoon, everybody.
It's encouraging.
I'd just like to say there's 73 fellows and members have attended this afternoon and 9 guests who are very welcome to be with us this evening. We have 2 overseas members have joined us. Mr. Dieter Portfeldt, but I think he's already gone. Yes, he has. And Mr. Johansson from Norway. Mr. Johansson? Yes. Good afternoon and welcome. Members, which is their first time this evening, first visit to the Royal, and Mr. Ray Smith. Stuart Smith, no relation. Hello, Stuart. Hello. And Simon Galway.
I said we could dispense with that this evening, and I hope you'll forgive me. Well, it's a great pleasure to introduce Richard this afternoon, and I don't mind admitting one of the privileges, as I said at the last meeting, is you get as president as you choose the programme. It can be a big job, but to be honest, I walked into Stampex and in 2005 to look at the exhibits, and about the fourth exhibit I came across was Richard's Camel Post. I'd never actually seen the exhibit before, and I was just absolutely stunned by it. As you'll hear in due course, I absolutely love Georgia Fifth stamps, Great Britain, and I think they are a fantastic issue. But when I saw this, and the way Richard had put it together, and the colours, and just the whole story, and somebody said to me today, I was trying to explain why I liked it so much, and I think it's the romance, the idea of a camel, the camel post, and the fact that this stamp lasted for so long. It's a superb exhibit from Stampex. It won the medal it got, but it got a gold medal and won the silver mail coach. Richard sold me. He's only exhibited twice since. He went to Harrogate with it, where it got a large gold, and then in Prague, in international. Well, I presume Harrogate was an international large gold, and then Prague, where it received a gold. Since I first saw it, it's developed in the respect it was mainly stamps at Stampex and is developed by adding the covers, but you'll hear more of that later. I'm sure most of you, or many of you, know Richard, but he's past president of the Postal History Society and past president of the Sudan Study Circle. And today he's the editor and the journal of the Sudan Study Circle, just in case you didn't know, but I'm sure most of you do. So it's my great pleasure to hand over to Richard to give us his 5 p.m. paper on the camel postman.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. Good evening, Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen. Our story begins in the early summer of 1897, when Edward Stanton, a captain in the Oxfordshire Light Infantry, was serving with Hector Macdonald's Sudanese Brigade during the campaign to recapture Khartoum. His duties included the preparation of military maps, which he illustrated with drawings of wells, oases, and desert scenes in order to make them more interesting. Now, his work came to the attention of Sir Herbert Kitchener, the Sirdar of the Egyptian army, who had already decided that the overprinted Egyptian stamps issued in March of that year should be replaced, and that the Sudan should have its own distinctive issues on becoming an independent postal authority. In the first frame, there is a cover franked with Egyptian overprinted stamps sent by Stanton to his father in England and cancelled approximately 6 weeks before they were replaced by his own camel postman design. Now, Kitchener had already rejected a design prepared by an accomplished artist. We don't know for sure why it was rejected, but it may be the case that because the artist had written at the foot of his design, if accepted, my fee for this work is 25 guineas. Kitchener said, well, it isn't mine. Sent for his ADC, Major Jimmy Watson, who was a close friend of Stanton's, and said, let's see what Stanton can do. Watson sent the design to Stanton with some instructions, and he was later interviewed by Kitchener, who literally ordered him to produce a stamp for the Sudan. Stanton, not being an artist in the accepted sense of the word, and having no experience of stamp design, was somewhat worried by this, and his likely fate, if he failed to produce what Kitchener wanted, became the subject of amused speculation in the office's mess. He was bereft of ideas for a day or two. And then the mail was delivered, this time by camel rider instead of the usual post boat, and that gave him an idea. He was friendly with the local tribespeople, so he persuaded a sheikh of the Hawawea tribe to dress up in his war kit, get onto his camel, and trot to and fro in front of Stanton whilst the latter took a series of photographs on a box Kodak camera. They were not a success, but they gave him sufficient information to prepare a series of realistic drawings, one of which was later accepted by Kitchener. And on the 6th of June 1897, Kitchener signed a letter to Messrs. Delarue and Company, the printers in London, setting out his requirements for stamps for the Sudan and asking for full designs and estimates of the cost to be prepared. That letter is displayed in frame 13 and is an item of some historical as well as philatelic significance. Delarue responded with a postage scheme sheet which sets out all the denominations, 2 million denominations in this case, but in the selective colours of the other denominations that Kitchener wanted. But there was some confusion that certain colours, when viewed in poor light, might be confused. So they then submitted a further 36 colour trials, and all of those are displayed in frame 13. There's 8 of them there. There's an appendix sheet with 20, a piece of 8, and 8 pieces of 8, separate ones, making the 36. In fact, the colours in the postage scheme sheet were finally selected. Delarue printed the stamps to a high standard, and therefore varieties are relatively few in number. Where they occur, it's chiefly amongst overprinted stamps produced to meet local shortages, or those produced for use exclusively by the army or by Sudan government departments. The display this evening features the history, development, and usage of this design. It is unusual for a design to be in use for so long, and probably unique, where its introduction took place in the circumstances I have described. Much of the material you see in the wall frames includes items from the Delarue archives, and I've attempted to form a representative collection for each of the issues, as well as illustrate the printing processes, the changes that took place throughout its long life, and some of the usages. The first issue was in use for 4 years, and very shortly after it came into existence, there were objections to the watermark in the paper on the grounds that, being a rosette, it looked like a cross. The authorities then decided to change it to the Egyptian star and crescent, but not to issue those stamps in the second issue until the first issue stocks had been exhausted. Usages are interesting because there's quite a lot of campaign mail around. Similarly, the number of post offices increased dramatically to take account not only of the mail from the troops, but also to provide additional facilities as the Sudan Postal Service developed. This is an interesting cover. It fits in 4 parts of a collection because it's a camel postman stamp, a travelling post office cancellation on it, It's a campaign cover and also a rec cover. So you can move it around the collection and show it many different times with complete justification. It bears the collision the cachet wet through collision on the Nile. We don't know anything about the incident itself. It's too insignificant given the context of what else was taking place at the time. But a bag of mail from the 1st British Brigade ended up in the Nile, and 16 covers are known with that cancellation. A couple of other usages. Wad Ramley, the large star and crescent date stamp, is the only recorded example on cover. Why they had a postmark or post office at Wad Ramley, I don't know. It's an isolated place in the middle of a gorge near the Nile. The other one is interesting. It's an unusual destination, Suakin to Angola, and it went via Berber and Lisbon. So it's a fairly long route from the Sudan down to West Africa. In 1903, although the second issue had started to filter into the post offices, there was a shortage of 5 million stamps, and they decided to overprint the 5 piastre denomination with 5 millimes. The inevitable happened in that 6 blocks of 30 went through the overprinting press upside down, and there are 5 examples on that front of a cover. It's contrived. It's a Leone Colucci cover. Sudan collectors will know that those covers quite well. But I haven't seen another one with as many items, many examples of that particular error on it. The second issue had a fairly long life from 1902 onwards until 1921 for the millime stamps and 1927 for the piastre values. 3 things happened. Firstly, in 1907, a 4 millime stamp was issued to meet the postcard rate to Great Britain, and I'm showing the appendix sheet with the stamps selected there, plus the letter from the Director of Post and Telegraphs in Khartoum asking De La Rue to produce colour trials for that new denomination. In that colour, it only lasted for a few months, when in deference to UPU regulations, the colour was changed to vermilion and brown. And I'm also showing the appendix sheet for that new colour. The third thing that occurred was that the key plate began to show signs of wear, with portions of the design missing on the impressions, and it became blotchy and had to be replaced. And we then see in the second issue the key plate number appearing in the margin of the stamps for the first time. Army official and Sudan government overprint stamps were first issued at that time, and they were done locally, and the standard didn't meet that of De La Rue. As you can see, army should read up on these stamps and the word official down. We have examples with army reading down and official reading up, with sheets that went into the overprinting press at 90 degrees, so the overprint appears horizontal. That must have been quite an achievement given the format of the stamps. And then this rather unusual item here, where both army and official are reading down. It was initially thought that that was a proof status, but it's a used example because it's part of the envelope to which it was originally attached. It does have a royal certificate. 82 years ago, in 1927, which, strangely enough, when I looked at it again a couple of days ago, after the pronouncement that the item is genuine, it has the words, "After consulting a higher authority." Your guess is as good as mine. Those army official stamps were replaced by the army service overprints, and they were done at the government survey department in Cairo. They made a bit of a mess of it. So we see, and these are just a few examples of the types of errors that occurred, inverted overprint, double overprint, two kinds, partly triple overprint, and a double overprint, one of which is inverted. After the overprinted stamps, they decided to puncture stamps with the letters AS representing army service. I'm showing here a block of the 10 piaster from plate 2, because only 600 of these were supplied. And so a plate block is fairly difficult to obtain. We move then on to the third issue. Shortly after the stamps were first issued in 1898, Kitchener made noises about reducing the size of the stamps to those akin to the Great Britain definitives. That was rejected by De La Rue because new plates would have to be made, expenditure would be incurred, and Kitchener didn't want that. But in 1915, some essays were prepared. The work didn't progress very far because the decision was taken to suspend any further investigations until the conclusion of hostilities at the end of the Great War. But the whole project was resurrected, and the reduced format camel stamps were issued in 1921. This item on the left is a good example that it's a very good idea to keep an eye on eBay. This is an item ex the Dancer collection and the De La Rue archives, which I found on eBay whilst looking for something else, as one does. And there's also a couple of progressive die proofs for the small format stamps that I'm showing here. This issue is interesting because there are a number of previously unrecorded proofs that have come onto the market, which weren't in the original sales that saw the dispersal of the De La Rue material. They're undoubtedly ex-De La Rue, but they hadn't previously been recorded. And note that there's only one Jubilee line on those blocks. I've got five in all in different unissued colours in the collection. Also available are quite a number of small format and large format printer samples, overprinted specimens. These were put into books, and they're all on very dark brown card. Many of them have since been cut up, issued to representatives who were going out trying to get business for De La Rue. 1927, there was a further change. The watermark was changed from the Star and Crescent to the letters SG, standing for Sudan Government. And there's some colour trials in the 10 piaster denomination. They also added a 20 piaster stamp to the range, so there was a new high value. This, again, is an interesting issue because it covers the wartime period. De La Rue's premises were severely damaged due to enemy action, and they had great difficulty not only in supplying stamps to the right standard, but also in obtaining chalk surface paper on which the stamps were printed. And later printings during the war had to be printed on a much far more opaque paper that wasn't of the same standard as the chalk surface paper previously used. Their problems in supplying stamps got to such a point that a new definitive series, temporarily issued during the war, the palm trees issue, were printed by the government printers in Nashik in India. And that, I think, relieved the pressure on De La Rue. This photograph, of course, illustrates the difficulty of printing high-quality stamps under wartime conditions. A couple of examples of the problems that occurred. Misplaced vignette. This variety occurs on most of the Millene stamps in the range. They again ran short of 5 Millene stamps and resorted to overprinting the 10 Millene denomination. It was done by McCorkerdale in Khartoum, and again, the work was very poorly executed. Out of a print run of 250,000, nearly 50,000 stamps had to be destroyed. Towards the end of the print run, at one position on the sheet, the five of five mills broke up completely, and they had to improvise. And one can imagine somebody scrabbling around in a box of loose type, looking for a five that closely resembled the original one, fitting it into a wooden holder, and then somebody sat there with an inky pad doing this. Hence the inserted five variety, and no two examples are in exactly the same position. That fourth issue had a fairly long life until 1948, when the fifth issue resulted in a change in the inscription, the Arabic inscription below the camel. An American academic obviously been studying this inscription, and the original one, which stood for Bosta Sudania, was changed to Barid al-Sudan because the original inscription had been in use for such a long time, since 1897. It was a hangover from the old Ottoman Empire days when there was a Turkish form of Arabic inscription used, which wasn't accurate. So the authorities changed it in 1948 and at the same time added a 50 piastre stamp to the range of values available. That 50 piastre stamp and several others in that range were overprinted new issue for publicity purposes and released via the Sudan Times newspaper. Also, all the stamps in the range were overprinted school and received a punch hole, and those stamps were used by the Post and Telegraph's training department in Omdurman. Although they'd been around since 1948, they didn't emerge onto the market until the early 1990s. And of course, people did question their status when they first appeared. The other change that took place was that the frame plate number, the duty plate number, appeared in the margin of the stamps for the first time. In 1948, there were also Legislative Assembly and Stamp Jubilee commemoratives, and I'm showing some of the proofs from the Delarue archives, photographic and hand-painted essays. Many of the stamps, particularly during the latter period, are fairly common. So it's interesting and challenging to try and find unusual usages. The one on the right, the intaglio cancellation used at the Wadi Halfa show, was only in use for 2 days. Well, the cover is contrived, but find me a commercial one. The other item is definitely commercial and did arouse a little bit of interest from members of the West African Study Circle, because it's an underpaid cover from a village in the Gold Coast, as it then was, censored, going through Egypt because of the first Arab-Israeli war, and the postage due is being paid by a 4 million stamp of the fifth issue, which is, again, an unusual usage. The fifth issue was the last one in which the camel design was used exclusively throughout all the denominations. A new pictorial issue came into being in 1951, but the 50 piastre still bore the camel postman design, albeit in modified form, because it was so closely associated with the development of the Sudan Postal Service. And I'm showing here a hand-painted essay. And when you look closely at these, you see how well executed they are. The quality of work produced by the printer's artists in painting at miniature items like that is really quite magnificent. 1954 saw the granting of self-government to the Sudan. For a while, it was uncertain whether it would be granted in 1953 or 1954 because of protracted negotiations with the Egyptian government, Sudan being an Anglo-Egyptian condominium. So the Post and Telegraph's department decided to do something that was rather risky. They printed stamps dated 1953, and they printed another set dated 1954. And they issued both sets to the post offices with very strict instructions that the correct set must be issued when self-government was granted. You know what's going to happen. Self-government was granted on the 7th or 9th of January 1954. At one post office, 8 stamps got out. They were rapidly collected up by Post and Telegraph officials and ceremonially destroyed. An official who was on leave went to a stamp exhibition in London and saw that the dealers were selling stamps, sets of stamps dated 1953. He then went to the Sudan agents to inquire what had happened and discovered that the agents had sold 5,000 sets to the trade. The dealers who had sets of stamps dated 1953 were invited to exchange their holdings for those with the correct date. I don't need to continue with that story. Very briefly, then, I'd like to go back to the point where I started. It's all right, I'm not going to go through everything again. When the stamps were issued, Stanton knew nothing about it. So he went to Jimmy Watson, his close friend, and he said, look, I'd like a souvenir of this. Can I have a sheet of paper with words on it to the effect that I designed the stamps, a set of the stamps, and it's signed by Kay? Jimmy Watson went away and came back later and said, Kay says, of course you can have a set of the stamps, old boy, provided you pay for them. That was probably a witticism on the part of Watson, because Stanton was never debited with the cost of the stamps. However, this item we in the Sudan Study Group handled some 11 years ago when we had a meeting, a weekend meeting, to bring together as much Cabell Postman material as we possibly could. And we had in the room Anthony Evans, the great-great-grandson of Captain Stanton, with this item, and it was hastily taken round to the photocopy shop. Many photocopies were produced, and there's one in the frame at the back. I haven't put this in the brochure or referred to it because it's still in the ownership of the family, and hopefully will never come on the market. But of course, at one stage, it was framed and hung in a bathroom, and Delarue printed their stamps in fugitive inks, and you can see what's happened to the colours. Ladies and gentlemen, as they say on News at 10, thank you for listening and thank you for watching.
Well, thank you very much, Richard. He kept to the time, exactly what I said to him. He told a superb story with lovely illustrations. I think it's an excellent display. Now, I'm sure, or I hope, there may be some questions for you, some awkward questions we thought we'd try and cook up, but Brian asked you that earlier on,
I know.
I'm sure there must be some questions. Anyway. Yes, Frank.
Is Stanton related to the Stanton who wrote the books on GB?
I don't believe he is.
There you are. Is that good enough? That would be. Any more questions? Everybody's really.
Give us a chance to think.
Oh, think of, yeah. Alan's thinking of one.
To keep it simple. Right. No, I'm quite taken with the cover you first showed with the overprinted Egyptian Sudan.
Yes.
I just wondered how many other multiple Frankings like that for a relatively short issue there are about.
I've seen probably 10 or a dozen multiple Franking covers. Yes, they are pretty uncommon. There's quite a few Stanton covers. There's a number from the Dongola expedition of 1896-97, which are unstamped. That is the only one that I've seen from Stanton that bears stamps.
That's very interesting.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Have a think of any more.
Go around the room.
Yes, everyone's got to ask a question. Obviously, your handout and talk has probably answered all the questions people could think of. That's pretty good, isn't it?
It did.
Yeah.
Well, what started you on this?
At one time, I collected Great Britain, and we all know what happened in the late 1970s. And I thought to be sensible, I could never aspire to the sort of material that I would like to own. So I went to Gibbon's Red Book, looking for a country to collect. When I got to Sudan, I'd already been a little bit interested in Sudan, and had dabbled in it. And SG1 was under £1. And the stamps were colourful, and they weren't too complex. And I wanted something fairly simple. I'd ignored the army service and SG overprints and the multiplicity of varieties that there are at the back of the catalogue. And I hadn't considered postal history. And that's really how I started collecting Sudan.
Thank you, Richard. Now, I think you've developed from this. You've also got a postal history aspect of this now, which you're developing. And I think we may well see that at some time in the future as well, because there's a lot of fascinating history to that. And, of course, the covers themselves tell a story, much social history. Alan, yes, please do. Yes, obviously.
In common with other countries, they often, when the surcharging or overprinted, it's carried out, appear to make a mess of it. But But I just wonder how much profit was made at the back door, because I can't believe all those varieties weren't noticed by them.
I think that's absolutely right. That bearing in mind some of these were done in places where security controls were probably fairly lax, and an optimistic eye was taken on opportunities for profit. I think that's absolutely right. Because the horizontal overprint on the army official is you know, if it was a completely square stamp, you could understand it, but how you can put a sheet through there and like that. I think so, yes. Yeah.
Alastair.
Yes, these 5 mils on the small 10 mils stamp illustrated, the bottom right original value looks other than 10 in Arabic.
There had to be an awkward one.
Can you give me the page number of the booklet that you're quoting from, please? Thank you. Right, the 5 mil on 10 mil, which is the 1940 McCorkerdale overprint. Am I on the right track?
The Arabic figures, bottom left is a 10. On the right, looks more like a 20.
That's a smudge. That's a non-constant variety. Yes!
Does he get his prize for spotting it, though?
Oh, yes.
Well done, Alistair. Any other smudge? No, any other questions? Oh, yeah, no. No, you was just waving to me. Oh, that's fine. Then I'd like to ask John Jackson to propose the vote of thanks. Thank you, John. I'd just like to endorse my thanks as well, because when I looked at this at Stampex, I thought this is one of the first... displays I'd like as president, and I'm delighted it is my first 5 o'clock, and I'm delighted you've delivered in every respect. It's a superb display. Well,
thank you very much.
Lovely delivered talk, and Jenny's still here to support you as well, despite hearing, and I believe you've got... Yeah, and it's lovely she's been able to join you and is not fed up with us all by this time, and your friends here as well, I understand.
That's right.
Excellent. Well, it's my pleasure to present to you the Society's plaquette for the display. It's got the name and the date and everything else. And
thank you very much,
Richard. Lovely display.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
May I just say how much I appreciate the support and encouragement that I've had. And I'd particularly like to thank Paul for his assistance with all the facilities at the Royal to make this afternoon a memorable event for me. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Now, the display will stay in the frames till 6 o'clock, so you've still got plenty of time to view the material before we leave. The next meeting on the 15th of October, 2 weeks' time, is the Malaya Study Group. It's their 50th anniversary. Get that right, Alan. 50th anniversary. I hope as many of you will come to that, because I know it's going to be a super display. Really looking forward to that. There's a few members here today that's given it a boost to make sure you do come and enjoy that. And there will be wine and nibbles downstairs. Not quite yet, I guess. No, not quite yet. Nearer 5 o'clock, there'll be some wine and nibbles downstairs.
5 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
Just want to see if you're awake, you know.
Yeah, good.
There's people down there already. The rest of them are down there. Get down quick. No, 6 o'clock. So I look forward to seeing you all in a fortnight and enjoying a glass of wine with you downstairs. Thank you.